Hey everybody, it's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. This week on Indirect Democracy, we're going to be taking a look at the situation in Darfur, plus we're going to have a look at immigration status, we're also going to have the global warming update, the president's love horoscope, a new sponsor, and of course, the What a Weenie Award. And welcome. That is a lot to try to remember to get into an intro for this episode, but welcome to Indirect Democracy, podcast number 26, to be exact, of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I am your host. My name is David. And Indirect Democracy, as always, is a very proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. You can find their website at progressivepodcastnetwork.org, and you can also go to their blog and forum site, which is at newmediarevolutionaries.com. Let's see, to start things off, I'm going to apologize real quickly for the delay in getting out any type of podcast over the past month. I have to just be honest, and I'm really blessed in the way that I can say this, is that I've just been super busy at work. I have a great job, I love where I work, but they've just been driving me crazy lately, in a good way. I say it in a very good way. To be very busy at work is a very great thing, and I have been exceptionally busy at my job, so it has prevented me from having the time and energy I've wanted to do this podcast. So for anybody who thought I was pod fading, I am not. That's why I wanted to get out those two ads, even though I knew that by the time I would have waited to get anything done, I didn't want them to basically get old or be not newsworthy. So I had those, I wanted to release those to let you know that I'm still out there, still thinking of different things, and all different types of issues go through my head, but I wanted to share those with you. So not pod fading, still going to be around. But to let you know, in about a couple of weeks, maybe towards the last week of May and the first week of June, I will be taking some time off. Won't be putting anything out during that time. My fiance and I are going to take a vacation. We just decided that with a whole bunch of personal issues we're going to take care of over the next year, that it'd be a good time to take some time off. So I will be taking time. Will be taking time off, and I will not be putting out anything during those couple of weeks. So if you think I'm pod fading, then no, it's planned vacation time. So just to let you know. And let's see, on other issues, I just have to bring this up because it occurs to me. Watching the news, seeing what happened in San Francisco, is it me or I thought that fuel, a burning fuel fire, couldn't melt or buckle steel and concrete? I'm guessing that the people in San Francisco will tell you differently, and I'm pretty sure right now that I've already pissed off the conspiracy theorists. It's just me, but I've, according to them, I thought that a fuel fire wasn't hot enough to buckle steel and concrete. Guess I was wrong. Guess everybody was wrong. Guess that freeway was wrong. Maybe the freeway was misinformed. So I've just pissed off the conspiracy theorists out there. So welcome. Welcome to Indirect Democracy. Let's see. To get into real quickly, I'm going to just share some personal stories with you about immigration. And of course, as I'm watching the news regarding the immigration march here in Los Angeles, I'll be talking with you about that, plus a personal story regarding immigration. And as well, I'll be sharing with you an essay about the situation in Darfur, and I'm looking forward to doing that. But, of course, where would I be if I did not get into the global warming update? And there's going to be a couple of things that deal with the global warming update. Of course, have to address the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision to uphold the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases. Now, of course, this is a mammoth decision and was amazing that it passed, but I think the thing that I brought up during one of the past podcasts, I cannot remember the exact one, but dealt with the Massachusetts versus EPA. The four justices that decided to cast dissenting votes were really no surprise. Alito, Thomas, Scalia, and Roberts, really no surprise there. But the issue that I knew would be the one that they would cling to, and I thought was the strongest thing to talk about, was the issue of standing. And of course, if you don't remember or would just like a quick refresher, standing means that you need to show that a injury has occurred or will imminently occur to you to show that you have suffered some type of damages for which the court can redress the problem. Now, that was the issue that occurred with Massachusetts versus EPA, was that Massachusetts had a hard time showing that they had suffered some type of injury due to global warming. And of course, my main concern back then was that they were focusing on the long-term future projections of what could occur instead of dealing with what is happening now. Either way, the case was still one in the favor of the state of Massachusetts and the other states that were asking the EPA to uphold its own guidelines, and thank goodness that passed. But because I think it's an important issue and because the issue of standing is important, it's always good to talk about, and this is why I have the global warming update, is to talk about the different methods in which we can show that global warming is going to affect, or has been, and is affecting various portions of the country and the world. And what I'm going to do for you is just share some very small essays, or actually portions of ABC News Nightline, dealing with a town in Alaska called Sisseqef. And of course, I'll be also sharing with you a story regarding Kiribati, and here they are.
But I've just returned from Alaska, where that emergency is in plain sight. There's a small village there, thousands of years old, at the edge of a frozen sea. And it's now in serious danger as the ice shelf protecting the coast is washing away. Global warming is not just a policy issue there. It threatens the very existence of the village of Shishmaref, Alaska, where I traveled last week.
Beautiful morning.
It might sound strange, but to get to the front lines of global warming, we headed north, way north. North from Nome, Alaska, across the rugged Seward Peninsula, all the way north to the little village of Shishmaref, a tiny speck of human habitation on the shore of the Chukchi Sea. About 500 souls living in a vast, pristine Arctic wilderness. The people who live here are Inupiaq Eskimos, and there is evidence they've been here for 4,000 years. Some things have changed, of course, and some things haven't. It was about 10 below zero the day we visited Shishmaref, clear, bright, and with a strong, steady wind coming right off the ice that'd peel your skin if you faced into it too long. Locals like Terry Nyakpa considered it a fine day, but they have sensed a change in their land.
It is kind of strange this year. I mean, in January.
Why?
Warm. It's like springtime.
The winter was like springtime.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one winter, and it's not just one year. Something is happening here, and all across the far north. Something scientists say is a harbinger of the changes to come because of global warming. Temperatures in Alaska over the past 50 years have risen 4 times faster than the global average, and that's had dramatic consequences on the crucial natural resource for the people of Shishmaref, the ice.
The sea here is frozen solid miles out. The Arctic Circle is just about 20 miles north of here. And while it might not look like it this time of year, this sea ice, this pack ice, which the native peoples all along this coastline depend upon for their livelihoods, is thinning. It's forming later every year, breaking up earlier, leaving the land here vulnerable to violent storms that are destroying this village.
This is what the autumn storms of the northern seas do to the land when they are not kept at bay by the ice. In recent years, Shishmaref has been battered over and over by the sea, and the town is literally disappearing. John Sinek teaches Inupiaq crafts at the Shishmaref School, keeping his culture alive. But he knows the time is coming when all this could be lost.
The ocean ice has been getting a lot thinner. It isn't as thick as it used to be. And it goes away much faster now than it did in the past when we were kids. And so a lot of the walrus that come by need that thick ice. And without that thick ice to haul themselves up, they'll just pass by as fast as they can. So we lose out on that part of our diet.
You can hear in John's soft-spoken directness just how closely tied the Inupiaq people of Shishmaref are to the land and sea and ice. Subsistence, hunting, and fishing, like the crafts, are a way of life here, their way. So it's more than a village that's under threat here from climate change. It's a culture, a unique part of the American heritage. To Tony and most of the people in the village, there is only one solution. Move. Move all of Shishmaref to a safer location on the mainland.
There's probably nobody in our community who wants to move. You know, we don't want to move, but we have to move. You know, we have to try to continue on our tradition as we have, and but the best solution for our community is to, you know, find a solution for ourselves, and that's what we're trying to do.
A few years ago, the town received money to build a seawall, but that's just a temporary fix. Moving the whole town, however, will cost a lot more. Government estimates go as high as $180 million, and it could take as long as 15 to 20 years. But Shishmaref may not have that much time.
Why would you want to stay here at the very edge of the world?
Just knowing that you're going to lose a place where you grew up, and with the things that you've done, your memories and everything, you're going to lose that, and it's going to be hard to go to another place and have to do that all over again and get used to the land and the environment all over again.
Today in Washington, D.C., a world away from Shishmaref, a group from the village came to Congress to lobby for help, for money, for action, to deal with the climate change crisis that they know better than almost anyone else.
You can't put a price tag on a human life and a tradition, culture, and value. You know, $180 million will be nothing, because we need to find a safe spot, not only for my people. I'm doing this for my kids and their grandchildren. They need a safe spot.
A safe spot. The peril facing Shishmaref today after 4,000 years is a kind of verdict on what climate change really means, on how it reaches even here, to this unique community, this living symbol of our capacity to make a home, to live in harmony with nature, almost anywhere on the good earth.
We turn now to a remote string of islands in the Pacific Ocean, a group of islands that may be about to sink, and time's running out for the people who live there. Bill Weir has the first story for ABC News' series, Keys to the World.
A Pacific Islander once explained the strength of his people. We're not from the smallest countries, he wrote. We're from the largest ocean. One appreciates just how large, flying 14 hours to the center of that ocean, and a speck called Kiribati. The nation is actually the size of three Alaskas, 2 million square miles, but almost all of it, saltwater. Most of the 100,000 residents have never left this necklace of coral. It is a poor nation, but life expectancy is long and the pace is slow on this part of the equator. Coconuts are the chief export. The children are well fed and schooled, the literacy rate above 90%. But when the tide comes up, their playground disappears. And in 50 years or so, all of this may disappear. Because this is Kiribati during a storm surge. As the earth warms, water expands, seas get higher, and waves get stronger. This documented trend means certain doom for the tens of thousands who live on a strip of land the width of a city block at an altitude of 6 feet and dropping.
Mr. President, Bill Weir. A little warm for you.
Anote Tong is the man in charge of a vanishing nation.
This is a beautiful home you have.
Well, it can't be nice. We don't know how much longer we shall have it.
His Excellency, Mr.
He took that desperation to the United Nations and stunned the world by claiming his country will be gone by mid-century.
Our very existence as a state is at stake.
You think it'll be 50 years?
We have to put a scenario on it. It is a certainty.
Does that mean it's too late to save your country?
I believe that is the case. I think the momentum has already been set.
The islanders' dependence on the sea and the sky for survival puts them in tune with changes in the climate. Linda Wan says she's seen those changes, and they are dramatic.
The land becomes big and then it becomes small. So, say 2 months, you'll have quite a bit of beach on your own property. Then the next month, you won't.
Kenneth Inatio, a local fisherman, takes us into the lagoon to show the changes.
This island went out to that structure.
Yeah.
And now it's all underwater.
Yeah.
20 years ago, this was a much bigger island, teeming with life. But when salt water rises, even a foot, it kills everything within 100 feet, destroying precious coconut palms, fouling precious reserves of fresh water.
The increased threat to the limited supplies of fresh drinking water from the rising sea levels could also cause Kiribati to become uninhabitable before drastic erosion ever does. And there is another force at work. The scramble to build stronger homes and seawalls has people mining the beaches for bits of coral and rock to mix with mortar. It sells for about $1.50 a bag, but the more they gather, the more vulnerable their island becomes. But much like the rest of the world, where there is alarm, there are skeptics.
I'm not really believing in global warming.
Zita Lopez tells me she takes comfort in the biblical story of Noah and God's promise never to flood the earth. It is a view she shares with her students as a high school principal. But if some rely on faith and others choose to wait and see, a few are taking no chances. People whose ancestors arrived in canoes are now leaving on jets for good.
There is no hope for Kiribati anymore if it is sinking, but I guess our government has to look for alternatives.
In bustling Auckland, New Zealand, 2,600 miles from home, Charles Anoka started life over. This is the one country open to so-called climate change refugees, now taking 75 from Kiribati each year. President Tong believes there will be tens of thousands more.
What's the response from other countries?
Neighboring countries will be reluctant to add burden to the existing problems.
In the meantime, life begins for what may be the last generation. No telling how many soccer games they'll play. The only certainty tonight is that the sun will set, the tide will rise, and this place will get a little bit smaller an hour before anywhere else. This is Bill Weir for Nightline in Tarawa, Kiribati.
Now, of course, both of these stories come on the heels of the release of a new study that shows that the ice caps are actually melting faster than previously projected, up to 30 years faster. But one of the main things I get a kick out of and actually sort of enjoy now is that when you search this podcast in maybe like iTunes, you'll find that it's associated with many environmental style of podcasts. And I don't consider myself an environmentalist. I just feel that the issue of global warming is one that's so important to us, as not only as a moral issue and a political issue, but just a worldwide global issue. I do my best to try to reduce my amount of, you know, carbon emissions as I can. But I take a now sort of new pride in being called an environmentalist, or at least being linked or associated with them, because I think it's an important issue that we all be involved with. And on a somewhat also lighter note, I actually got some feedback from a listener who told me about her switch over to the compact fluorescent light bulbs, and that by switching as many of them as possible within her home, her lighting bill has actually gone down by half. I mean, her electric bill. And that's, you know, it's also part of the fact that it's winter, and I know that energy prices will go up in the summer as cooling goes into effect. But it's just sort of nice to hear that in some way, shape, or form, at least she's saving some money on something that's a use of a little bit less energy. So I'm trying to find the right words. Is actually helping to reduce her carbon footprint as well. Well, as we know, it is that time of the podcast to give out the president's love horoscope. And as we know, our president is in fact a Cancer. So to guide him along and show him the way, we have found this use of the stars. From the pages of Elle magazine comes the president's love horoscope. Hold on, turn it down. Oh yeah, there it is.
Feels so good.
Oh yeah.
Lying here next to me.
For the week of April 29th, 2007. His love meter reading is a 7. A friend or loved one may be pulling the strings while you dance, Mr. Bush. You might think you're in charge, or at least on equal footing. But think again. That caring, affectionate person you view as a pseudo semi-soulmate may now be the boss of you. Oh yeah. Maybe something freaky going on with you and the VP. He's always been the boss of you, Mr. President. But when and how did this happen? And is this what you really want? Is it President Bush? Well, clearly, an extraordinarily physical attraction has something to do with it. FYI, watch out for arguments over the weekend. This week's touchstones are the upside, the obsidy, and the celestial. And that is this week's presidential love horoscope. Easily becoming my favorite part of this whole thing. But we have to go on to the rest of it. So here is this week's. So here is this ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
Activist?
No, I wouldn't, no, say, I wouldn't that. Say that.
If mass media exists to invest our lives with artificial notions and arbitrary values, let us take that media back.
How do you possibly think you can make a difference?
We need to talk more, we need to listen, we need to ask more questions.
These are the puppets of the government.
Do you not worry for your own safety?
You know, even if they came to bump me off, it would be a hollow victory for them because it would not stop the word, spreading. They're too late.
The power of the documentary, the drama of truth, alters our understanding and perceptions of the world around us. You choose mass media or real media for the masses. Audio activism? Sounds good to me. Documentally.com. Documenting the mind.
Well, of course, today being the 1st of May, and this is when this is being recorded, I hope to get this recording out within the next couple of days. Today they had the massive amount of protests and rallies regarding immigration here in the United States. One that was so big and expected to be so big in Los Angeles has actually produced a great amount of controversy regarding the police actions in MacArthur Park, and I'll be keeping a closer eye on that as details emerge. But on a personal note, I wanted to share this story with you because I always think it's important to talk about when they talk about immigration and in so many ways when people talk about, well, they don't want to be here in this country except to just use it for its benefits, so they're not really, you know, fighting hard to become American citizens. You know, all the negative points of view that are brought up during this time whenever people talk about illegal immigration and immigrants in general. This past week on Thursday, I had the good fortune and made a damn strong effort to take a lunch and go see a friend of mine get sworn in as a new citizen. And if you've never seen one of these before, it really is an amazing spectacle because I was in part of the convention center, the Los Angeles Convention Center, and they had to convert this massive hall into what was, you know, for lack of a better terms, and was called the federal court, because there is no federal court in the world that could hold the 4,066 people that showed up to get sworn in. And it really is amazing to watch the massive amount of people that are there to become part of this American experience. They're there from all regions and cultures and ethnicities, all there to share one dream. And to be honest with you, it really is inspiring watching them raise their hands to take that oath and swear their allegiance to this country. Because you come here hoping for a better life for yourselves, for your children, and also to be part of an ideal, to believe in the fact that you are part of this country that fights for and believes in equality, justice, the rule of law, the very things that make this country great, and as I've said before, what makes this country so unique and so wonderful and just so amazing of what we're able to accomplish is that this country is, and it's not really my idea, I remember hearing a long time ago, but I do like to share it, this country was founded on an ideal. It wasn't founded on a similar culture. It wasn't founded on a similar religion. It was founded basically on the idea and the concept that the law would be the ultimate determinant of our being. It would be what would guide us all and give us, hopefully one day, even if not now, equal justice under that law. So to be there for my friend swearing in was, it was really a treat. It was one that I will treasure for a long time. And I just ask you all to remember that in the fights that people will bring up, in the conversation that we have, remember that there are many people who want to share in that dream and work very hard, even illegally, to achieve that dream. And for the people that are able to work and get to the process, and I saw my friend go through this process, and I can't even begin to tell you the struggles, the pain, the tears, and the sheer joy that this brought. I applaud her, and applaud every one of those people that were there. And I just wanted to share that story with you about immigration. But now here's another ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
All I'm saying is give peace a chance.
Wait up.
It's time to take to the street.
Mainstream media, where are you?
George W. Bush was born on third base but thinks he hit a triple.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
All the oil men in the White House.
Rumsfeld's cronies, buddies, neocon pals.
What is wrong with this picture?
He just bypasses whatever's in the Constitution.
Just when we think it can't get any worse.
Fascist government, dictatorship.
He's like the ultimate spoiled brat.
Wake up and smell the oil fields.
Remember who said
this? This is healthcare.
This is get sick and die care.
Mainstream media doesn't cover it, so that's why we're here.
Yeah, look for me at Gitmo. That's where I'll be.
After September
11th. Playing the 9/11 card every time again.
Americans subject to eavesdropping.
These actions are within the president's authority under the Constitution.
It's ridiculous.
And laws.
What do they have to hide?
It's poo-poo.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
I dare anyone to call me a conspiracy theorist.
You know, one of the great things about being associated and using the MySpace page is being allowed access and information to many users who have different varied political views. I received a friend request from a woman named Maria from Maria Halinia, or Halina, I apologize if I got her name incorrect, whose website on MySpace is called Global Day for Darfur, which is scheduled for late in 2007, April 29th. I immediately posted her accepted the friend request and posted her within the top friends because of how important the issue of Darfur is. Now, it's one I haven't brought up yet and do plan to talk about in an upcoming episode of Indirect Democracy, but I mentioned to her that if she had any essays that she would like me to spread out the message for, I would be glad to read them on this particular podcast. So, I would like to read to you this essay from Maria Halinia, or Halina, I apologize again, regarding the website for Global Day for Darfur. And if you want, you can go to the MySpace page for Indirect Democracy, and you'll find her listed amongst the top friends. But here is her essay. It's entitled, We Press Technological Advances, Now Let's Press China on Darfur. In the 21st century, advances in communication have been significant. We watch iPods fly off shelves, and we text message each other. This while other human conditions worsen. Clearly, more advances need to be made to end hate crimes in Darfur, where a lasting interfaith conflict continues between a hardline, intolerant Islamist regime and a non-Arabic people. Sudan citizens are bound to the Sudanese government by borders drawn without concern to the relations between these two rival groups. The atrocities are as horrific as Bosnia, Cambodia, and Rwanda. The U.S. and many world bodies have acknowledged the crisis while China continues its policy of non-intervention in Sudan. The Chinese government needs to make greater advances toward pressing Khartoum for more effective domestic solutions. China gives Khartoum full support in achieving unity however they see fit, while the rest of the world receives reports of Khartoumi's inaction and attacks on non-Arabs. Presently, China plays the obstructionist, slowing down UN intervention in Darfur and showing greater commitment to its own foreign policy. Given all of this, the lack of targeted pressure on China seems to send Beijing the message that Darfur is only of marginal interest to the West. I don't think the crisis is of marginal interest to the West. An encouraging signal is that China recently mentioned their concerns about Darfur in meetings with President al-Bashir. In contrast, the U.S.-led efforts in the Security Council to approve travel bans and asset freezes on four specific individuals responsible for committing heinous crimes against the non-Arabic, unrepresented people of Darfur. The West has given them a voice, while China shows contempt for human rights efforts and continues to dominate exploration and production in Sudan's oil reserves. Since 2003, daily attacks by the Janjaweed and other Arab herder leaders have been authorized by the Sudanese government on non-Arab farmer tribes. Janjaweed attackers claim that the Sudan is only for Arabs. Many reports have revealed that rape is being used as a weapon of war, where the Janjaweed berate non-Arabic women, calling them slaves and informing them that they will now have Arabic babies to change the color of their children. In the 21st century, China's policy of unqualified support of the Khartoum region has allowed a tyrant government free rein over a terrified population. Khartoum's Islamic regime, ruled mostly by the National Islamic Front, who also control all oil concessions and operation contracts in the Sudan, rely on Chinese protection at the UN Security Council and credit China's fair policy as a boost in business. China's current government should reconsider putting its national interests before its international obligation as a UN member state in its obligation to respond to threats to international peace and security. Mikhail Gorbachev in 1987 set dramatic changes in Soviet foreign policy to agree that UN military observers and UN peacekeeping forces needed to be put to wider use and that the Security Council members should become guarantors of regional security. Why not China? A recent student protest in New York shows a growing civil society movement in opposition to China's complicity in Darfur. The international community should continue to relentlessly press China to use its leverage with Khartoum to advance peace talks between Arab and non-Arab groups in Darfur. What kind of 21st century is this, when we can use technology to watch history repeat itself and the same horrifying actions and inactions of governments on remote people who are being forgotten but documented? It's a 21st century that allows the Chinese government to neglect its social responsibility in its close relations to Khartoum. A 24-hour flight away, with a few layovers in New York, Dubai, and London, from our world of advanced technology, and there in Darfur is reason enough to continue pressuring our world leaders to pressure China to stop its complicity. And that is this essay from Maria Halina, whose site, Global Day for Darfur, you can find through Indirect Democracy. Thank you to Maria, and if there are any other essays of import that you'd like to be read through Indirect Democracy, please feel free to contact me at david@indirectdemocracy.com. Well, just as a musical break, I'm going to share with you a song called Still Waiting by the Grey Boy All-Stars. Found this from KEXP Song of the Day, so just wanted to share something a little different with you, and here it is.
Cash, no motivation.
once again, that song is called Still Waiting by the Grey Boy All-Stars. I encourage you to find their music somewhere online. I'll have a link for it on the homepage for Indirect Democracy. And speaking of the homepage, real quickly, wanted to talk about that. I got it back running. So changes will be happening more on a much more timely basis. The site will be updated more frequently, but I got the service to work again, and after several months of not having it work, it's really great to have it back. So I apologize for any of the delays that have occurred and not having the site updated. It was just one of those things that was unfortunate, but hopefully now changed. Well, as always, it's time to pay the bills around here, and of course, here is this newest ad from our sponsor for this podcast.
Hi, Sally. What's the matter?
The job market is so tough. How can I find a great job when I don't have many skills or seem qualified for anything that pays well?
Gee, Sally. No skills?
No.
No qualifications?
No.
Well, that's not a problem when you apply with the GOP.
The GOP? You mean the Republican Party?
Yep, with the GOP, the only quality that counts is good old-fashioned red blood and loyalty.
That can't be right.
It is! Just look at the people who have worked for the GOP. Harriet Myers, Monica Goodling, Michael Brown, Condoleezza Rice, and Alberto Gonzalez. Do you think any of them were qualified for the jobs they got? Heck no! And neither are you. Just imagine it, a high-paying job as the head of FEMA, the Interior Department, or even as the Attorney General. And all for just being a loyal suck-up.
I don't know. Shouldn't I have some skills or training to be qualified for those jobs? That doesn't sound ethical.
Well, if you're going to be all ethical about it, then you can get a job in the right-wing media by attending our brand new Republican University for Slander and Hostility, or RUSH. At RUSH, we will teach you all the skills to be a right-wing talking puppet with a good job at the New York Post, Fox News, or the Weekly Standard. Plus, you never have to worry about little things like the truth, honesty, or accuracy. Heck, you could be wrong all the time and still be an expert on Fox News. Just ask Bill Kristol.
Wow, where do I sign up?
That's easy. To get your job application for the GOP, just call 1-800-555-BUSH. Or to apply to our new university, call 1-800-555-RUSH. All applicants must be willing to sign a blood oath to Karl Rove. Applicants with a sense of empathy, sympathy, compassion, and simple human decency should not apply. Admittance from Pat Robertson's Regency Law School are granted immediate employment. So call now! No skills, no qualifications, no problem. The GOP and RUSH, offering this nation incompetent and bloviating fools job opportunities since 2000.
Well, it's been a month since I've done one of these, and to be honest, the field of people to nominate is too vast to comprehend as to who stands out as the biggest weenie of them all, which is probably why I have two of them. Now, as it's been a month, I could start by claiming that Don Imus is the winner. But despite Mr. Imus's lack of ability to realize he said something stupid and should apologize for his sexist and bigoted comments, I actually fault NBC more for not taking more decisive action against his producer, Bernard McGurk, for using this statement to follow Imus.
So I watched the basketball game last night between a little bit of Rutgers and Tennessee, the women's final.
Yeah, Tennessee won last night, seventh championship for Pat Summitt. I man, they beat Rutgers by 13 points.
That's some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and
some hardcore hoes.
That's some nappy headed hoes there. I'm gonna tell you that now.
Oh, man,
that's some. Ooh. And the girls from Tennessee, they all look cute, you know. So. Like kind of like a, I don't know,
Spike Lee thing.
Yeah.
Jingaboos versus the Wannabes.
Yeah,
that movie that he had.
To me, this was a worse statement to make. Yet nobody really brought it to light. Now think of it. Ask yourself: would you ever use those words? I couldn't even imagine myself using those words, but Bernard McGurk did, and yet it took NBC far longer to fire that man. And while I'm on the subject of NBC, I could argue that their release of the Sung Wee Cho video was highly inappropriate at a time when people were struggling with the question of why. Why were their fellow students and loved ones gunned down? This is a much more important question, but NBC chose to air this video that seemed to only add to the pain. Now, I also have a slightly different view of this as to the timing. I actually think that the video should have been released, but at a much later date. Now, I'll tell you why I think the video was important to air, or at least should have been important to air at a much later time. As a person who majored in criminal justice and actually, you know, got so into it, I would study the criminal psyche on my own and took great interest in it. I took a great interest in this case because, to me, it was a great look into the mind of a clearly self-delusional mind that felt a pain that may have only existed in his imagination. You know, to get a look into the mind of a mass killer is, for the lack of a better term, and I hate to say it in this way, it's intriguing, and I don't mean to say, use those words to cheapen what happened to those 32 people, but I think the video needed to be released to allow a look into the mind of someone like this man. I also think that his manifesto needed to be aired so if anyone knows of someone speaking words like his, they can recognize this danger and deal with these people before anyone is harmed. Or have we all forgotten how Ted Kaczynski was caught? But it gave me a clear winner for the very first What a Weenie Award. And that winner has to go to people like Michael Bortz and other right-wingers who actually claimed that the students who did nothing or took no decisive action at that time weren't men enough or strong enough or brave enough to fight off the killer at that time. People who would claim that they would know best on how to act in a situation where they have had no training, no ability to fight off somebody like that, and not even mentally prepared for that type of action in a college room, in a college classroom. Soft, cushy people, soft-bodied and soft-minded, could sit back and easily claim that they knew best on how to act as if they were some imaginary Rambo who would have acted perfectly at that moment of danger. To place blame on the victims of this goes beyond disgusting. It's reprehensible. During a time when people were suffering and trying to just understand the simple reasons of why their loved ones were gone or why they survived, silly, soft-minded, soft-bodied people chose to question their integrity, their bravery, and their instinct for survival. That is the greater reason why people like Michael Bortz deserve this part one of the What a Weenie Award. But I'm not done yet. Now, I could give the second award to the military and their handling of the details surrounding Pat Tillman and Jessica Lynch. The outright lies told about our soldiers are stunning. Pat Tillman died in what was the right war, but at the wrong hands. Didn't it cheapen his death, or what he believed in because it was by friendly fire? He dropped everything and put his life on the line because of what occurred on September 11th, 2001. Fighting the terrorists in the real Central Front called Afghanistan. He lived proudly, and his death should not have been used like so many a cheap prop for this administration, an administration more interested in theatrics and perception than reality and dignity to our fallen soldiers. How little we heard about Jessica Lynch's testimony that her proclaimed acts and those of her rescuers did not occur, but are now nothing more than mythology and lore that should have never been told. Our fighting men and women deserve more than that. They bravely give their all and deserve from our government not just words of self-aggrandizement, but proper care, and at the very least, the truth. Now, I also want to almost cast Weeniedom on a group of Democratic candidates who at this debate last week, who when asked who would stand with Dennis Kucinich to act to impeach the vice president, stood by quietly and almost laughed. Laughed at what is not only proper and legal, but necessary. Impeachment should not be some political tool used to embarrass political foes in the way of what occurred to President Clinton, but as a real tool to remove the very people who speak of their love and protection of this country, yet have done nothing but enrich themselves on the backs of the less fortunate and pervert the very laws they swore to uphold. The vice president's actions in so many ways deserve to be investigated and, upon the proof of it, held actionable by this Congress. He has lied on countless occasions about the actions that took us into an unnecessary war in Iraq and has profited from it to a degree that would make even the greediest of men go, damn. Damn, take it easy there, Dick. As much as I want to, maybe that's not the winner. Perhaps this Weenie Award should go to John McCain for his apparent lack of ability to grasp reality anymore. That escapade into Iraq cost countless amounts of money and manpower in a sad attempt to boast his sagging poll numbers, all the while endangering the lives of our soldiers so he could go shopping. All the while, no one noticed that he also endangered the lives of Iraqi citizens who looked like American sympathizers and ended up dead days later due to bombings at those markets. Also, McCain could strap on his souvenir body armor and tour Iraq as if it was a tourist attraction. Well, if he wanted to be a tourist attraction, maybe he should have worn some mouse ears as well. Or maybe to a president who would attend a convocation for a fallen student, but has never attended one for a fallen soldier. On a personal note, I almost want to give it to the Orange County Register for running a commentary section, the entire thing on Earth Day, disputing the facts and science about global warming. Maybe I should give everyone that I've listed here the What a Weenie Award. But I've already given one to right-wing pundits, but I have to make sure that the last one goes out to this person. This final What a Weenie Award for this podcast goes out to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. The firing of 8 U.S. attorneys for what were clearly political reasons is hard to dispute. Or maybe until they find all those missing emails, it's hard to dispute. But no one is arguing that the president can let go of a U.S. attorney at his will. That's a given. If this administration had just said that they were making changes and nothing else, this is not a story. But they had to do what they always do, besmirch someone's character as they do it, despite the fact that it's not true. 3 of the fired 8 attorneys were listed in the top 10 rankings of attorneys in the country. Carol Lam herself had received letters of commendation by the Border Patrol and was recently named by the American Bar Association as the Lawyer of the Year. On a personal note, having dealt with the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Diego, their office in the past few years is far better run and more professional than it was under Clinton's administration. She runs a good office, but as always, they can't seem to give anyone their dignity. So, in robbing them of their jobs and then trying to destroy their good names, the Attorney General in this administration lied about these law enforcement officials. Lied because they did not toe the political line and dared to prosecute the criminal actions of Republicans such as Randy Duke Cunningham and his links to Dusty Fogo and the current scandal involving prostitution in Washington, D.C. How dare you, Mr. Gonzalez? Fire them. Let them go. But do not go so far as to cheapen their accomplishments with clearly slanderous statements of their inability to be prepared and do their jobs when you obviously cannot be prepared for questioning by the House Judiciary Committee. The only real link to this administration and the Reagan administration is their inability to recall anything. Just like Reagan and North before them, it's a symphony of I don't remember and I don't recall. Well, get used to that, folks, because that is the language we'll hear for the next 18 months. I don't remember and I don't recall. Until this administration has just another sad link to it, Reagan as being an administration overwhelmed by greed, corruption, and indictments. Mr. Gonzalez, for the good of the nation and as a Latino that is embarrassed that you would dare to link your heritage to mine, resign. You are now clearly incapable of having any power to back up anything that you can say in the future. And any man that would lie about the performance of people so highly qualified and capable shows his true color of a yellow coward who would only dream of being able to be as qualified had he not George W. Bush as a friend. You, sir, are a disgrace and a winner of this What a Weenie Award. Whew, well, that was a lot. And that'll be it for this episode of Indirect Democracy, podcast number 26. of indirect democracy. I apologize also again for not getting to the subject of modern day slavery. I will be getting to that sometime soon, work allowing, and I will be getting to everything. But I do want to thank you for taking time to listen. I see. I'd like to, as always, I'd like to encourage you to call in or write in. The call-in line for Indirect Democracy is 206-339-4797. And you can also write me at david@indirectdemocracy.com. And as always, where would I be if I did not thank Megaphone, Matt Bloodwell, and all the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their music, Not Your Enemy, from the album For Crying Out Loud. You can find their music at their two websites, which are www.megaphonemusic.net and at their MySpace page, which is myspace.com/megaphone. I encourage you to go to their site. You can also find the album For Crying Out Loud at iTunes. But once again, I do want to thank you for taking the time to listen. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and bye for now. How the hell with it? They're all a bunch of weenies.